The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to Music Weekly from The Guardian. I'm Alexis Petridis, and coming up in today's podcast, LA noise poppers No Age tell us about their new album Everything in Between and wearing an inflatable gimp suit in a video shoot.
I think for us, you know, the idea of doing things yourself and making things accessible and making scaling things down to the point of where two people really can function as a band was really important to us.
In Singles Club, we've got Jamie Woon, Tal M. Klein, and Dells, or D-E-Ls. And as Hyperdub's Dark Star released their debut album North, the Mancunians discussed the torturous process of putting the record together and the transition from DJing to live performance. That's all in Music Weekly. Hello to Rosie Swash.
Hello.
A sad day, I gather.
I failed my second driving test this
London's
morning.
Pedestrians can breathe easy. I'm sorry to hear that.
I only got two minors, though, which is anyone that's familiar
with
it.
You only knocked over two minors?
Which is anyone who's done their driving test will know isn't very many.
Right.
But right at the last hurdle, managed to enter a no-entry bus lane. Much to the displeasure of my very nice examiner. She was very sweet about
shame.
It.
Well, you know, you heard it here first, people. Keep tuning into Guardian Music Weekly for latest hot updates on the progress of Rosie's driving lessons. And also welcome to Ben Beaumont-Thomas. Hello, Ben. We're seeing a lot of you at the moment.
Yeah, I'm enjoying my little visits into Guardian Towers.
Excellent. No, it's always lovely to have you. And you've been seeing No Age recently. Did you go? You both went to see No Age?
Yes, we went together.
You went together? Wow.
And one more person, with Jen.
That's Jen, right. Wicked.
Other half of Ben and Jen.
My accessory.
Oh, you're in trouble.
How were they?
They were excellent,
Two thumbs up, yeah. Mm.
Two thumbs up. Well, look, the two-man band, No Age, released their third studio album, Everything in Between, a couple of weeks ago. It was streamed on the Guardian website prior to release, so you may well have heard it then. Well, before they played in London last week at XOYO or Zoyo or whatever you want to pronounce it, Rosie caught up with Randy and Dean, and we'll hear that interview after a quick blast for the new single, Glitter.
Perspective of how you write songs, that what's your life like day to day, month to month, you know, how does the looking at the arc of No Age's years past the 3 to 5 years, how does songwriting fit into that and how has it changed?
For the last 3 years we've been on the road quite a bit, so we sat down in the beginning of 2009, I think really with a clear idea to take that year to write a record or make a record. So we started writing. We have a practice space where we practice, and we would go in there and just start really loosely, kind of just playing around, just making sounds that we thought were interesting, and we'd record a little bit of those, and those would sort of would end up being the samples in the songs. You know, as we could come back to those and kind of just playing around with ideas and just sort of having fun with no real clear idea of what it would eventually be, just try to have an open idea. And so we would do that, I don't know, 4 days a week.
It's funny, today we were driving from Manchester here, and I was listening on my iPod to all these things that were recorded at home or kind of in between us writing songs. Because on tour, it'll be like, I'll think of something and kind of write it in a notebook or think of a lyric or something. So I was listening to all this stuff that's like weird little snippets of like vocal lines, melodies, and like sample stuff. It's kind of funny. But
you can sell that to your fans as rarities. You know that,
I was listening to it, I was like, it's kind of good. Before it's sort of embarrassing, but I'm like, it's pretty good. But yeah, a lot of that, like getting inspired on tour, just using what means we have to remember and get stuff down.
We had a streaming of your album on The Guardian.
Thank you.
That's it. You're welcome. There was quite a few comments underneath. Well, there were, you know, people commenting saying, "Oh, about time that the Guardian got behind these guys," and then other people saying, "What? Like, what's it? You know, are you mainstream anymore? Does it even exist? At what point?
Right.
You know, it's like some people think finally the world is catching on, but the other people want to look at it totally differently, which is to just kind of dismiss something once the world does catch on."
It's hard because as a kid, you find out about music, and when you find something that you really love and you found it by yourself with your friends, you want to hold on to it. And when it goes out to the general population, most of the time, if you're into underground music and underground sort of world, it instantly becomes tainted, and you're like, "Oh, all right, well, my friend, if my like sister's talking about it or my friend, nah, I'm over it," you know. So I could see that, but I like messing with that sort of status quo of what a punk is or what an underground thing is or what mainstream is, you know.
In a way, I feel like you guys are the progenitors to a degree of a lot of bands at the moment don't necessarily sound exactly the same as you, but seem to be there seems to be a lot more of emphasis on scaling down and stripping back, and maybe some of the effects that are distinctive in your music. And I wondered whether you thought, you know, there was any other reason other than the fact that you guys have been doing it for so long. Shoehorn a little bit of flattery in there. Any other reason that that might be something? You know, because we get hundreds of CDs in the office every week, and it's like, God, they all have this same trend.
I don't know. I think for us, you know, I was just going to say, I think
quick schemes.
I think for us, you know, the idea of doing things yourself and making things accessible and making scaling things down to the point of where two people really can function as a band was really important to us, just for logistical reasons, you know, like that was what we needed to do to survive, you know, how to just deal with things on a small level and deal with things that we could actually understand and kind of break things down and make it kind of a personal experience in terms of seeing the band live or just how we communicated with people. We try to just use a little bit of common sense and just think about what we would like if we were the audience. So I think we really made things. We use this idea that if we didn't understand it or if we wouldn't like it, then why would we do that? You know, which seems almost
so smart,
so simple. Yeah, you know what I mean? It's like, because people will tell you, like, "Oh, to be a band, you need to do things in a certain way, and this is how bands work." And to us, it was never about, you know, being someone else's version of a band. We wanted to be us. We wanted to be ourselves.
Yeah, make music that we thought we wanted to hear, you know, songs that we wanted to hear. And also keeping it scaled down and minimal so where we can actually keep it DIY and do everything ourselves.
My final question to you is, which one of you donned the inflatable gimp suit?
Ooh. Okay, well,
I think that's a mystery that we're not able to answer that at this time due to legal reasons. I think
my mother might hear this, and I just would not be able
to.
It was either one of us or neither of us.
Yeah,
like, you kind of have to let your imagination fill in the blanks with that one. That's the beauty of that clip.
It's a fun image.
There's so much mystery.
It's fun.
Who would want to ruin
it? Real fun.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, it depends on who you're asking.
It depends what your idea of fun is.
Yeah.
If you're into that kind of thing, then it's a lot of fun. If you're not, then it's kind of disturbing.
What gimp suit? I'm sorry. You just mentioned the gimp suit. You need to bring it into the interview. Is one of them wearing a gimp suit?
If only. Well, there was a clip. There was a clip on. Was it for Life Prowler?
It's the very first
thing, and they sort of had this teaser to say, "Hey, we're back." And actually, I don't think, you know, they did reveal who wore it when the recording was going off. But you sold
that particular story to Heat magazine.
Exactly. Lips are sealed. But it's just a guy in a gimp suit in an otherwise bare room, and he blows it up to just, it just looks absolutely,
wow,
like it
would
be the most horrible
Michelin man. It's quite,
yeah,
quite,
wow, the most horrible sensation on your skin, but obviously some people find it arousing.
Wow, well, there you go. That was Randy and Dean from No Age chatting to Rosie. Now, have they crossed over? I found that interesting that we were talking in this interview saying, you know, war, they've crossed over. And I mean, you know, there is a tendency sometimes on the Guardian blogs, and we love the comments on the Guardian blogs, to go, I was into this 15 years ago, it was really boring, and now you've caught on, and well done for, you know, buying into the corporate machine.
Sheeple.
I am fairly certain that Chris Martin from Coldplay isn't lying awake at nights reaching for the night owl, thinking, you know, if only I could get a wink of sleep for worrying about No Age stealing our audience. True. To what extent can this music cross over, do we think, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely a kind of many, many gradations of how much something can penetrate the mainstream. But I think in terms of, you know, Pitchfork reading, Mojo buying, perhaps guitar fans who have their fingers on the pulse, then they are a kind of viable mainstream product, a breakthrough band. Their new album is definitely their most kind of mainstream, most cleanly produced one yet. There's still a very delightful amount of murk there as well still. Yeah, I think they've got, there's some great big pop tunes on there, like Glitter has this real kind of almost My Sharonery type drum pattern to it. It's great pop music, but yeah, no, I don't think it's going to be quite Guy Hans territory.
No, absolutely. You know, they're not going to get the X Factor, are they? They're not going to get the guest slot. It'd be amazing if they did. Yeah. I noticed they're having guilty pleasures on the X Factor this week.
Yes.
As opposed to
the
usual.
Mind
yeah. Well, no, it's just that great idea of the normal, you know, as opposed to last week, which was like, you know, Noi Week. I didn't really get the album, I've got to admit. I think my problem with it is, and I'm getting really bored of saying this because I'm really am sounding like an old, you know, a terrible old wanker. That kind of stand-up drumming, distorted guitar thing that's going on. Once again, we're back to the music of my youth, and it sounded a little bit C86-ish to me, as does a lot of this stuff. I mean, the band, they sort of remind me of a bit of Abe Vigoda, who I like, I think, probably a little bit more than I like No Age. They don't have as good tunes, I don't think, as No Age, but their brand of guitar overload I find a little more original, I guess.
I think that's what I was trying to get at with my question. Not obviously, I do not think that No Age invented this template that they work to. But for a band that have been around since about 2005, 2006, it's interesting. You know, we've talked before about it feels like every other single that you listen to has that, you know, seems to be taking its cues from Loveless. And that does get quite boring. But I do think there's something in it that No Age have, seems to be just ahead of the curve of that particular trend in new bands. Mm-hmm. And not just in the kind of music they make, but the way that they make it and the kind of the leaning towards scaling down and bedroom made music and a kind of closeness within a scene, and they definitely seem to represent that, which is why to a degree you could say, well, maybe, you know, by the third album they've crossed over. But
I think they've got a really quite a sort of interesting, unique sound, because when we were at the gig and we were being, you know, sober music journo types and standing at the back nodding gently, but there were a lot of people
at the bar who were
pogoing and crowd surfing, and it, you know, ostensibly,
and they did
it
at
looks
the end
like
as well, didn't
yeah
they?
Exactly, yeah, and it's a, you know, ostensibly very much a punk gig, but I'd refer to it as being kind of less like a punk gig and more feeling like you're dreaming of a punk gig. It's a sort of slightly warped sound to it,
and
this echoes echo kind of effects on the vocals, and these sort of non-specific atmospherics below everything you can't quite get a handle on. It's sort of very
so fluid. How does it work live? It's like a dude playing the drums and the other guy playing guitar
and a third guy who does some knob twiddling,
I've never seen him before.
He's got a serious look.
He was
what's
interesting. Kind of like 80s gothic nerd chubby guy.
Wow. Like a John Hughes movie or something.
That's amazing. Yeah. Everybody should have a band.
Yeah,
every band
really,
should have an 80s
really
gothic
getting
nerd
into it.
Guy.
Yeah, he loved it.
That's fantastic.
And the drummer sings, which is a good look as well. Mm-hmm.
I really like the music in the background there, and I'm going to go and check out the No Age album again. If you are so inclined to do something similar, or check it out for the first time, in fact, Everything In Between by No Age is out on Sub Pop now. It's time for Singles Club now. Rosie, Ben and myself, as ever, have each brought in a track to discuss. First off, this track was chosen by Rosie. Am I off my trolley? I can burst with the dead, cause another sound boy got burnt with the lead. I disperse words, empty my mind on these rubbish MCs, all dying to shine like my grandmother's halo. Lay low, I spit bars, venomous, the next in line. Don't know, it's evident, I'm African. Slap back, hand palming, ram javelins, throw them through your garments, pierce through your heart and capture your soul. Ring the alarm, it's the bellboy show. I'm a Martian, blow trees with the Daleks, ET's on the knee. Can't stop dancing on the dance mat of my mind. It's lunchtime, I need food. That was Trumpalump by Dells. What's so funny about that? What have I done now?
Trumpalump. Dave Simpson suggested to me that it was rude to say Trumpalump up north or something like that. But
why would it be rude to say Trumpalump up north? Trump, yeah, Trump, yeah, Trump's, it's definitely, yeah. Trump is definitely a northern word for fart. But,
not necessarily rude.
Not so rude. I think he's being rather prudish. That was Trump. We'll try again, shall we? That was Trumpalump by Dells. Rosie, you brought that in.
Yes. I really liked Dell's last single / his first single, which was Shapeshift, and I should have brought it in, but I don't think it timed well with something or another, so I was waiting for his next one. I think this is excellent. It seems to change quite a bit about halfway through the track. It's produced by, I think all of his stuff is produced by Joe Goddard from Hot Chip.
Wicked.
He's on Big Dadda. And it suddenly becomes this completely different song, and it has this very dreamy production quality to it, and Joe starts singing, and it's almost completely different from the beginning of the song, which I really like. I don't know very much about him. He's from Ipswich, signed to Big Dadda, worked with Joe from Hot Chip. I find his rhyming really interesting, and I think that in the scope of the last, you know, if you're looking at the last 18 months, rap and hip hop or anything of that ilk in the UK has been incredibly successful, not necessarily creatively very interesting.
Yeah.
And it seems to me this is the first British MC I've heard for a while who seems to take his cues a bit more from, I guess, the Roots Maneuver style.
Yeah, I was thinking he sounded a little bit like Dr. Octagon, actually, which is not something British MCs tend to go for.
Exactly.
That kind of Cool Keith weirdness, you know what I mean?
Exactly. And I hope, and I wonder whether this could be the kind of thing, to me it seems like it could be just commercial enough, but, and I hope it could bridge the gap between the Tiny Tempers and the Chipmunks and the stuff that they're doing and some more interesting things. I wish him all the success in the world, but also his videos are excellent. I'll check them out on YouTube.
Go to YouTube. Ben, is this your cup of tea?
Yeah, I did like it. And I agree about the sort of the lyricism where he's rapping about 80s in Star Wars being on ecstasy and eating Bakewell tarts and stuff like that. It's all good.
Man, I like the way that Bakewell tarts on ecstasy is a very man of,
I think that's after ecstasy when you come back home. But but yeah, actually the way that you liked it, Rosie, in the, you know, having this sort of episodic nature almost to the production, like going from one thing to another, I actually thought that was maybe its undoing, even though all the parts are actually very engaging, and this bit where Joe sings at the end is beautiful. But at the same time, I think that almost undoes its potential commercial appeal, that there isn't that kind of chorus and that sort
monster
of first chorus
sort
of structure that you need. That I think that, you know, Tiny Temper has and is engaging for. So I'm not sure whether it's going to make that crossover. But yeah, it's kind of an interesting curio rather than a pop hit, I think.
I'm really pleased to see Big Dadda still sort of making intriguing British hip-hop records, not necessarily following the herd, not necessarily kind of going down that commercial path. I agree completely with what you're saying. I think it's really interesting. The last Tinchy Strider single, if you noticed, all the verses are exactly the same on it.
Yeah.
I mean, lyrically.
He says this sings the same lyrics
in my system.
And I mean, I actually think it's a brilliant pop record. I think it's a great tune. I think it's the best track of his forthcoming album. But I think it says something about where he's aiming for as an artist, that he's sort of almost taking the kind of lyrical skills out of the equation a little bit in, you know, service of making a great pop record, in that, you know, the record sells itself on its tune, on its hook line. I think in its own way, it's as brave a thing to do as what Dells are doing on this record. However, I think in an increasingly sort of pop market for hip-hop, British hip-hop, whatever you want to call it, I think it's really interesting to see Big Dadda still striking out on their own, making something different. Trumpalump by Dells is out on November the 29th on Big Dadda. And now, let's listen to Ben's Choice. That was Night Air by Jamie Woon. Ben's Choice, you brought it in. Tell us a little bit about Jamie Woon.
Jamie Woon is a kind of a troubadour guitarist by trade, but he's struck up this extremely fruitful partnership with Burial, Burial remixed a track he did, well, a cover of the hymn Wayfaring Stranger a couple of years ago, which is stunning. And now he's produced this. And I think it's really interesting for Burial because he's moved more towards this 4-4 template away from the breakbeats that he used to do. And I think that Burial's genius with his first two records was kind of, rather than cutting down a solid pattern of beats into a breakbeat, he would make them almost seem like they'd kind of coalesced out of this floating matter out of nowhere. And he started to do that, I think, with this 4-4 beat as well. It's rather than starting with something very kind of heavy and solid, it seems like it's been drawn together from bits of dance hall and bits of things that are sort of wafting around. It's that sound of nocturnal London, I guess.
It's a hugely atmospheric record, isn't it?
I mean, and the vocal melody is one of the best of the year, I think, from Jamie as well.
I thought it's absolutely brilliant. Second record in 2 weeks that's going for a kind of singer-songwriter, vaguely Prince-ish kind of slash dubstep vibe. Clearly there is something going on here.
But it's interesting because I was talking to some artist manager at the weekend who was complaining about, you know, trying to find new talent that he was personally really interested in. And I'm sure people love hearing about people in the music industry complaining about the quality of bands. But he was saying, from his point of view, being somewhere in the middle of finding talent and the labels, that there's still so little support for these kind of male artists because they don't fit clearly in the market. So people are still interested mainly any woman, solo woman, who's vaguely in the ilk of like, or in the mould of Florence and the Machine, or still, you know, Amy Winehouse or something like that. They'll go for it because they still think they can replicate the success to some degree. Or, you know, you can imagine if Jamie Woon playing his guitar, that kind of thing would be ushered into the Paolo Nutini. It's really difficult to find them a place, which obviously we know doesn't mean that they're not good, but I understand that it must be really, it's really frustrating as an artist manager to know that there's stuff like that. Because we were talking about it with reference to James Blake, who obviously is quite similar. You know, being a white soulful artist, it should be, especially at the point that UK dance is at now, the most fruitful time, and there should be records like this. And that's what the record industry should be supporting, and unfortunately they're not.
You know what they should do? I've just come up with a brilliant plan to break this music into the mainstream. The guy on the X Factor with the hat.
Storm.
Matt Cardell. He should be making records like this.
Or Aidan, actually. Aidan, the fierce mental.
I think Aidan's a bit much.
You don't like Aidan.
Oh, it's all a little bit. Over that version of Jealous Guy was the most histrionic.
But it wasn't actually on key.
It was also just off its role. But I mean, I just think he's a great vocalist, that guy from The X Factor, and would actually do something amazing, rather than what they'll probably push him into doing, which is some sort of terrible
Bruno
James Morrison.
Yeah.
It would be amazing if he made a record like this, and it's the kind of thing that could bring this music, which is a lovely sound. I think we're all
agree. Yeah, I really hope Radio 1 pick up on this,
so
I think they will, but you know, it's a stunning pop melody.
It's all over One Extra.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I listen to One Extra all the time. And so that's great. I mean, I really, really hope this is a hit. It would be a breath of fresh air. And I would love to hear an album, you know, particularly produced by Burial. I think it's the kind of sound that would support, you know what I mean, 45 minutes of music in this vein. I would love to hear it. Night Air by Jamie Woon is out now on vinyl, but will be released digitally in November. And now, finally, this is my choice. That was Without Her by Tal M. Klein, about which I confess to knowing very, very little. I was in a dance music record shop. I asked for what new stuff they had in. This was one of the records they gave me. I really like it. I think it's got a lovely kind of... There's a lot of this sort of thing about. There's a lot of kind of Balearic, new disco, whatever you want to call it. I found this sort of ambience of this and the kind of melody behind it really good. This sort of strong kind of melancholic tug rather than just doing the kind of obvious sun-blissed out thing. He's doing an album and it's coming out, I think, in the new year. That is all I know about Tal M. Klein, but I like this single. Rosie.
That's all I know about him. More than I know about him.
You say I'm informing
hard to
you.
Google. I must say that I did not enjoy it that much. I found it a little dull.
Really?
Ben and I were discussing before we came up, you know, the resurgence, the new Balearic stuff, and it's not something that I am that into.
Right.
I think, was it the week before last we were talking about Leo Zero, and I mentioned that he'd done an extremely Balearic remix of Lissy's When I'm Alone, which is great, and with the exception of the fact that it's got bongos all over it, a perfect remix, which is pretty Balearic. But generally, it's not an area of music that I like that much. And I appreciate what you're saying about the melancholic tug, because generally what I don't like about the new Balearic stuff is the blissed out aspect of it, and it kind of does the opposite of what we were talking for me about the kind of physical reaction that you have when you listen to music to what we were talking about with No Age and how they create a dreaminess in their music, and it just doesn't produce any reaction in me. So sorry.
That's okay, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, I differ from Rosie in that I'm fully paid up member of the new Balearic fan club.
Right, okay.
Love it, but I don't think this is a very good example of it. I think it's a little bit tame, bit thin, personally.
What kind of stuff do you like? I mean, when you say so, what
I'm really
kind of
into the whole the kind of Scando scene Bergen and Sunkist and all of those guys and Prince Thomas. And there's an amazing record actually coming out, which you'll probably really like, Alexis. It's by Bjorn Torsk.
Yeah,
have you heard?
I'm aware of Bjorn Torsk.
Yeah, his new record. Everyone get it. It's excellent. Very good blend of this kind of sort of 4/4. Balearic-ness in the second half, and then almost kind of Duetty column, Steve Reichy guitar-y stuff at the beginning.
Yeah, that's amazing.
A really kind of good journey.
Fantastic. I wonder if it's an age thing sometimes with the Balearic thing. I have a feeling that a lot of customers for this music are around my age, my enormously advanced, you know, late 30s age. We used to be, as I did, you know, ravers, clubbers in the 90s, and it's all a bit beyond us now. And you want something that kind of captures those emotions, but you can play at home on headphones. And you know what I mean? I obviously wouldn't be seen, you know, go anywhere near a nightclub these days. So I do wonder if there's a kind of, I mean, there is a disco dad phenomenon about it, and I wonder if that is the kind of degree of selective appeal about this music. Nevertheless, I really like it. Without Her by Talim Klein is out now on Anilegital. What a dreadful name for a record label, Talim Klein. Sort it out, mate. Some comments now. Maniar KM, Do the Bathosphere, and Kag and Kraken all posted in about Paul Lester's new band of the day. Thanks for that. Wrong forum, guys. Try elsewhere. On the Crystal Fighters interview and their Spanish mixtape, James 312 writes, so great to hear some Spanish pop. La Movida, 1979-1984, gave the world some amazing records. Great to see Almodovar and McNamara getting some recognition. Yes, that Pedro Almodovar. Supposed to Dickiak Almodovar, his brother. And they made my favourite worst video in history. Great. Few people were raving about James Blake. F-Pol writes, yeah, getting very, very excited about James Blake. Love that every single thing he releases is quite removed from what he did last, and yet just as exquisitely produced. His music shows what excellent production can achieve, especially with so few sounds. Though, like Rosie said, I do think I Only Know What I Know Now is still his best. Someone agreeing with you, for once. Jimmy the Exploder. Wow, great name, Jimmy the Exploder. James Blake is so talented, so nice one for featuring him on the pod. But you can't just mention one side of his music without the other. Mm. His vocal tracks are indeed brilliant and will no doubt get him a lot of fans in indie circles, and there is nought wrong with that. But you can't deny his talent at creating insane dance floor tracks as well. Quite. Thanks for all your comments. Remember, guardian.co.uk/musicweekly is the place to leave them. We are big fans of the Hyperdub label on this podcast, so you may have gathered. And in Darkstar, they have unleashed another forward-thinking electronic act. One day, Hyperdub are going to put out a band that sound like Oasis, and our world will cave in. This week saw the Mancunians release their debut album, North, which was actually recorded in East London, where the pair now live. Emma Warren...
What?
I don't know. I don't know why I did that. I was doing my Northerners move to the South face. Speaking as a Yorkshireman now resident in Brighton, I don't know why, what I think I'm talking about, really. Emma Warren met up with Aidan and James of Darkstar at their homemade and not fully soundproof studio and wondered if any of the extremely noisy surroundings of the Lower Clapton Road made it onto the record.
There's a lot that we chopped out, but I kind of wanted to keep a lot. I would have left more sirens in, but there are a couple of sirens here and there. It's like the bass from the vibration of the windows and stuff like that. It was quite a tough thing to do, because at first we thought we were in an ideal situation, because we could live and work in the same place and just get on with it. And we didn't really disturb anybody before 12 o'clock, 1 in the morning, like sound-wise, so we could play the music late, you know, till late. But once we got over that period, it got to the point where we were sleeping in, we got two bedrooms downstairs, and you'd literally walk up the staircase and you'd be in a work environment, and it was like, it was quite torturous, really, yeah, it was horrible sometimes. But the summer we were recording, because we saw about 2 weeks of sunshine this year, didn't we, in London? And they were just literally recording in because we had to have all the windows closed because all the sirens were going off. And it was just hot like an oven. It was unreal.
One thing I noticed about the record is it sounds very coherent. It's kind of a nice bang on 40 minutes. It feels like, you know, to use a slightly ridiculous phrase, a proper album. But were you kind of aware of what's made really good albums work in the past when you were making this one?
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the good things about an album is like the case and the fact that you're going to discover a bulk of tracks together that you might not be familiar with, and I think that's quite an exciting thing to go through, and my enthusiasm for that has never ever been lost. And I just think you know, we started to analyse like the running order of the tracks and various mixes and sonics and lyrics and parts musically would change because they wouldn't flow with the track that came afterwards, or the thing that we went through various running orders, so like literally full mixes or track names, and the fierceness even of certain tracks would be altered just so we would have things that sat within each other and would work and flow smoothly. So
made that transition from just DJing to actually playing live. What kind of things were interesting for you about making that transition, and how's it been?
I suppose the one that sticks out is like trying to look live, right? Because there's quite a lot of elements on the album. There's a lot of piano and stuff like that on the album, and you know, we just can't accommodate a piano on stage, so we had to transform things sonically. We've had to like strip a lot of our stuff back to go live, and yeah, we're just still getting into that kind of feeling to keep the things we like and the things that probably aren't as strong as in parts and stuff like that. So that's been difficult. And obviously the sound's hugely different from going out to DJ. You know, you have to really be on the ball on sound check and stuff like that. So all these things are new to us, and you know, we've never gigged like this before. It's just, it's a very steep learning curve. But slowly but surely, we're starting to get to a shell of what it could be. So it's very early stages, but it's getting there slowly but surely.
Aidan and James of Dark Star talking with Emma Warren. They're talking a lot about their flat, I noticed. Two-bedroom, studio upstairs, gas central heating, sorry, no DSS. I actually quite liked what was going on in the background there. Ben, I gather you don't.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a lover, not a hater, but I really think I really did hate this record.
You really hated it?
Yeah,
wow,
yeah.
God, that's amazing.
Yeah, strong sentiment.
That very strong sentiment.
But yeah, I just found it really... I think I've only had a couple of days to listen to it, admittedly, since it appeared on Spotify, but found it very tasteful. And I mean, lots of my favourite bands are very tasteful bands. Mm. Like, I really love Stereolab and the Sea and Cake and that sort of sophisticated, nice coffee table stuff. But this was tasteful in a very po-faced and full of gravity and seriousness. And I found it very, very tedious and flat. And I just, didn't like it at all.
Oh, I thought it was all right. Rosie, what do you make of it?
I thought it was all right too, but not much more. I certainly didn't hate it, but I found it neither detestable or lovable, if I'm completely...
It's an interesting idea, because we keep talking on this show. Every week we talk about, listeners are bored to tears, about, you know, finding ways out of dubstep, you know what I mean? And finding ways this music can progress in such a way that it sort of transcends the dubstep ghetto, so to speak. You know what I mean? So it's not just bloggers and stuff that like it. And I guess this is one route that it might take, which is kind of the trip-hop route.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is, I suppose you could, you know, some people have said Burial's a bit like that and so on and so forth, which is into sort of more backgroundy, you know, slightly dinner party-ish music. I don't think it's... I've got to disagree with you, Ben, on the basis of what I've heard of them. I don't quite think... You know, you make it sound like more Chiba or something. I don't think it's that, you know.
I think it's got an interesting set of influences almost. It goes, takes things from almost like Mogwai's more kind of sedate period. And it's also drawing, I think, a lot from sort of European electronica, like more music and Not Twist and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But with this kind of rooting in dub and in that kind of club world. And there are bright moments, you know, AD's Girl is Computer, which is a single that came out last year, is fantastic, and it's got this real drive. But then there's the rest of it just falls apart in this rather meandering sea of grandiosity, I think.
Is this the kind of legendary dance music problem we're encountering here, of music that generally speaking, in the same way that house works best, you know, in 7-minute long single bursts? Is this the case? I mean, is this the issue that somebody's taking an idea and that would be great if it was a couple of 12-inch singles, something like that, and stretching it out into a album-length thing?
Yeah, I don't know. I think that there's real potential with what they're doing, but I just think that at the moment they seem to have ideas above their station almost. And they said they were listening to a lot of film soundtracks, and I think that while they're making it, I think that kind of points away into the slightly grand designs they have.
It's back to the trip-hop thing again, isn't it?
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting idea. I thought it was all right, actually. I disagree with Ben. It's obviously very difficult for you to imagine this, but I'm not as heavily immersed in the dubstep scene as I think you are. It's sort of thing I could imagine listening to at home. But then, you know what I mean? Maybe I am that target market that you're talking about. You know, I'm an old... decrepit old man with children, and you know, maybe I don't want...
I think it could sell well with, you know, the 50 quid man.
Yeah, thanks. Well, there's no need to agree with me. It would be interesting to see if it did cross over into that kind of, you know, whatever, the Mojo magazine. I don't know.
But I think for hyperdub, it's a bit of a retreat from the, you know, adventurousness of and envelope pushing of that label, personally.
Okay. Rosie, any final thoughts?
No.
We'll leave it at that. Okay, fair enough.
Well, you know, I can attest that there are lots of sirens on the Lower Clapton Road because I too have lived there.
Really?
Yep.
It's quite a, yeah,
to keep those windows closed.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's a funny old thing. I feared for the neighbours a little bit.
Yeah.
They were so sad. They're going, it's all right. We could make music till midnight, 1 o'clock. Not if you live next door to me, you can't, mate. Tell you what, I'll set the wife on you and then you'll know about it.
If people next door are recording music, they're getting sirens and Dark Star, which is an even worse combination.
Next door just trying to watch location, leaving a quiet line. Try to find somewhere else to live, probably. North by Dark Star, a controversial album, I think it's fair to say, on the podcast, is out now on Hyperdub. That is your lot of Music Weekly. Thank you for coming in, Ben. Always insightful, always, you know, opinionated. Always good to
see
you.
Sorry for the hate, everyone.
Hey, yeah. Quit drinking the hater, eh? Where, yeah. And Rosie, I will doubtless be seeing you next week.
Of course. The sheer joy of that prospect has rendered you speechless.
It caused me to lose the will to live temporarily. No, I will be seeing you next week, Rosie.
Yes, you will.
My thanks, as ever, to producer Pete. I'm Alexis Petridis. Thanks for listening, Sensation Seekers.
For more great downloads, go to guardian.co.uk/audio.